It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/redcircle.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The following broadcast may contain free thinking and open-minded discussion, ideas, skepticism, and adult subject matter. Topics will be discussed using adult language, sometimes gratuitously. Get ready to move the conversation forward. This ain't your granddad's news and comment show. This is I Doubt It Podcast with Brittany Page and Jesse Dalamore.
Welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us. Episode 936 of I Doubt It Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Dalamore. Joined today by the lovely, talented, and scholarly Brittany Page.
So we had a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful snow day.
Wow. In DC. Beautiful.
Yeah, for January 6th, for the anniversary of the Republican-led insurrection. It was a massive snow day. And what's strange about DC is that they're aware that they sometimes get massive snowstorms here. Not often, but
like maybe a foot of snow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they are completely ill-prepared.
It's so crazy.
They do little to nothing to the roads, honestly, because we actually went out. We went to the Capitol. You did a quick hit in front of the Capitol, as close as we could get to the Capitol with the 8-foot fencing completely around the perimeter.
And not just the perimeter, like, we'll get to it.
Yeah, and all the cops, I mean, so many cops all around the Capitol.
And not just local D.C., not just Capitol Police. We saw Fairfax County. Mm-hmm. Different municipalities around the city. There were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of cops, as though Democrats were gonna. Anyway, we'll fucking get to it.
Yeah,
I'm trying to get there.
So driving up to the Capitol, though, the roads were
atrocious,
so bad. I mean, dangerous. And you would think even around the Capitol grounds, like within the area that the perimeter was up, that they would clear the roads, but no,
nope.
No, there.
It's like. It's almost like DC has like 5 snowplows.
Yeah.
And that one of them's broken down.
Yeah.
And then it's fucking very, because it's not just, oh, we'll take care of the main arteries.
Right.
And then the side streets, they'll just have to melt it off. It's even the main arteries are just fucked.
Yeah. It's wild. So it was pretty uneventful down there. I mean, there were certainly other news organizations, other, I think, probably creators online filming things.
Yeah. Zero
down in the
protesters, though. I mean, well, we did see the fuck Donald Trump guy on the bike.
Yes.
Which was funny.
Yes.
But no mass organized, no insurrection, certainly.
Yeah.
No violence, no Trump flags, of course, because this one, totally on the up and up, this election.
Mm-hmm.
Democrats apparently forgot to steal this election.
Mm-hmm.
But the one in 2020, they had it all. They figured out how to do it.
Yes. Yes. Well,
so stupid.
And to the important stuff, those of you who are wondering, yeah, but how did Sweepy enjoy the snow day?
And I am really trying to get us to the show because I'm excited to talk about what dirty insurrectionist pieces of shit we still live with. But I do want to talk about Sweepy because holy shit.
Yeah.
We have a dog, everybody. I don't think she could love the snow anymore. I think Sweepy thinks she's a Saint Bernard.
Yes.
Or one of those huskies that you see the viral videos of who refuse to come in.
Yes.
And they're covered in snow. Like literally under a snowbank, just sitting there comfortably, like, this is the life.
Yeah, we have to, we take her to a place in D.C. where she can run around freely. And so we took her there, and she just went wild and had the best time of her life, was shoving her head into the snow. And she really does love it. And at a certain point, you know, some dogs don't know their limits, and I think she's the same way.
Yeah.
Because she loves to run around. She's really fast. People will comment on how fast she is because you don't expect it from a bulldog. But when it's too hot outside, she will go, go, go in a way that is like, okay, we need to reel you in because you can't take care of yourself and you're going to push yourself to get heat stroke. And it was similar in the cold where she would have just kept going and going and going. And it's like, it's cold out here and you're wet.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And we need to, at a certain point, intervene and get you to move along. So she did have a great time, even if it, you know, was cut much shorter than she would prefer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can follow along on those adventures at her Instagram, because we are those people.
Yeah.
At Bully Sweepy. Sweepy.
Yeah. Sweepea. And is that also her TikTok? Because she has a TikTok too,
she
right?
She also has a TikTok. Yeah. I don't do a ton with it, but yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, it is a good time. We are those dog owners. The other day, who were we talking to? And I absentmindedly said it as though it's a normal thing to say, because she's a bulldog, and you know we buy her like sweaters and stuff because it's cold. She's short haired and
right.
It's cold. Like she in the videos yesterday, she was wearing her little lavender jacket.
Mm-hmm.
And I said it as though it's a normal thing. I go, yeah, she's impossible to buy clothes for.
Oh my God. Yeah.
And then you pointed out in front of the person, which I don't mind because I think it's very funny. You're
yeah.
Like, pointed out that I sound like an asshole.
Yeah. Well, also, it sounds like we buy her a ton of clothes. She has two sweaters and one jacket.
Yeah,
and she
yeah,
just
yeah.
got the second sweater and the jacket this season, because I actually read an article in the New York Times or whatever, and they interviewed some veterinarians, like, do your dogs actually need clothing? And for smaller dogs, the answer was yes. Like, they struggle to regulate their body temperature. And although Sweepy is a bulldog and people may think that she looks big, she's actually small. People ask her if she's a puppy.
Still, yeah.
And so she, I think, it falls into the category of needing clothes, but also looks super good. The clothes that we get her match her undertones. You know, she looks great and stylish. She's styling. So, yeah. Okay, so since you're so eager to get the show moving, we can read some listener emails that we have received.
All right.
And hop to it. And we're actually going to
do it as I fight through this yawn. I'm excited to be here, everybody.
It's a choice that you made, yawning and talking. You like forced out the talking during the yawn. You could have just yawned silently away from the microphone,
nah.
And yet here we are.
Nah, nah, nah.
All right, so we're going to start with an exit survey on Patreon.
Oh, and one of these.
Yes, because we got another one. So you can become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast.
And you can make up for the loss of this patron who left.
And the reason that I'm explaining that is for people who may not know what an exit survey is on Patreon. So you can become a Patreon supporter. And then at a certain point, you know, if we say something that rubs you the wrong way and you decide that you hate us, like this person.
Or you, if, like, what? They buy their dog clothes. I'm fucking out of here.
You can delete that pledge and you can give us feedback on why you chose to do that. And that is what this person did. So they wrote, I have spent the last 2 decades of my life working in law enforcement, trying to change the system, trying to right the wrongs. But to hear Jesse on December 24th talk with so much hatred and disrespect toward police officers was more than I can support. Not every cop is a bastard, Jesse.
Hmm. That's it?
That's it.
Oh. I agree. all right. But let me ask you this. I think what they're talking about is a video that he did where, you know, if you listen to the show for any given time at all, you know that we have critique for the police and police brutality and the fact that it's a larger share of police who are bastards than are given credit for. But what was the first couple sentences there? What did they say again?
That they have spent the last 2 decades of their life working in law enforcement trying to change the system, trying to right the wrongs.
Why would it take, if you have pushback against me calling into question the integrity and the actions of police, but then you also say that you've had to work for decades to clean things up? What needs to be cleaned up if everything's hunky-dory in policing? Why? That seems incongruous to the point of the critique of me bitching about cops being, I don't think I said bastards, but they're not heroes. I think that's what, I went through the same thing I've said for years on this show, that just because you're a cop doesn't make you a hero, doesn't make you a noble public servant, that you need to do the job. And by usurping constitutional rights, by acting brutally towards suspects who have the presumption of innocence. Yeah. Anyway, I'll see you later. Bye.
So we're going to get people who delete. That's fine. We're going to get people who disagree with us. Obviously, we're not. We come at this with our own perspective, our own bias. That's why we invite listener communication, because there are going to be things that we miss, because there are going to be things that we don't focus on. And it is important to get other people's perspectives. Now, one thing that we tend to focus on a lot on this show is the people who hold positions of power.
Yes.
And the police are armed agents of the state, and they are given the authority to restrict, remove people's freedoms. Yep. And so they have a very serious job. And we're actually going to be covering 2 stories on the show today about cops doing terrible things. And it's a theme of the show because it happens so frequently. And so I don't think that the ire should be directed at people who criticize the system, who are trying to draw attention to the problems within the system. I think that we need to direct our ire at the system. Yeah. And policing. And it seems like this person, according to them, has been doing that for the past 2 decades. So I don't know why they would be upset when other people are joining in to help them do that.
It's also, let me say this, if you've listened to me here, and we've been doing this show, in March it'll be 11 years we've done the show. But if you watch me on YouTube, and you've taken away that I'm somebody who's going to be like rah-rah cops, if you think I'm going to be somebody who's not going to be punching up at the power structure, and instead punching down and, well, listen, what was George Floyd, was he doing drugs at the time? Why didn't he just comply? If you think I'm going to be that guy, I don't know what you've been listening to and cheering me on in my rhetoric and my positions prior. What made you become a Patreon supporter in the first place? If you think I'm some fan of police brutality or taking part in apologia for cops who act badly. Mm-hmm. Of course there's good cops. There's good people in all professions. But we absolutely have a policing problem when brutality is so ready and readily, it's so fucking notable. Come on.
Yeah, and that's one of the stories we're going to be talking about is the 13 corrections officers in a New York State prison who beat a man, an incarcerated man.
To death.
13 took part in this beating. They took turns for 20 minutes. They went and washed their hands. They put on different gloves. It was like just another day at the office to these
monsters.
These dangerous people who have still not been charged, by the way.
Gang violence is what this... We're going to get to it.
Absolutely. But anyway, what I'm saying is 13 corrections officers at one New York State prison, and people are still going to be coming at critics of the police with this nonsense?
Yeah,
we understand that there are good people who do the job, sure. But they're in a system where they are stifled, right? You can't change it from within.
Yeah. Well, also, so what impact did you have during your decades-long quest to change the system? Did you fucking change it? Or are there still horribly bad cops at play in the department you worked, guy who was a cop for 20 fucking years and can't abide by any criticism for the cops? I'm going to stop being a Patreon supporter.
Or lady, we don't know.
Yeah, well, I would assume, yeah, maybe so.
All right.
I would just assume that it's a dude.
Okay. So anyway, thank you for however long your Patreon was active, and sorry about the situation.
Not fucking sorry. If you'd like to replace them, patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast.
All right. So we have an email, and then we will continue with the show since Jesse is so eager to do the show. Jesse, this is in response to...
What is this, shit on Jesse Day?
Well, yeah.
Is that really? Is it another shitty message?
No, it's talking about how you're correct.
Oh.
So, on our previous episode, we opened with, like, Uber stories, problems with Uber. And so this is in response to that. Jesse was basically correct. The cameras are an individual equipment purchase. The camera continuously records for as many videos can fit on an SD card, usually about 2 days worth. And then the oldest videos are recorded over in order on a loop. However, most cameras have a save button. So if whatever happens in the moment, the driver can push the save button, or if he thinks about it at the end of the day, he can save it then. There are many states that allow people to be recorded without their consent, and many drivers have YouTube channels that post content for entertainment. Some states require signed consent to publish, but any moment can be recorded for personal use, such as security and legal purposes, and of course getting their rocks off in the privacy of their own home. Just saying.
Wow.
Yikes. That was me adding that. That's not in the email.
Well, listen. Well, let me just... Is there more?
There's more.
Okay, well, let me say this first. If you got some serious kink going on, if you're getting your rocks off to me in the back of a car talking about or being irritated by the Christian music station that's playing.
I don't know if it's specifically about you.
Like,
but
I cannot imagine someone just feverishly, furiously just abusing themselves as they look at my irritated face listening to Christian music in the back of an Uber.
Back to the email. An important tip, especially for you guys or anyone who might feel vulnerable, is to have the Uber driver pick you up at the corner store, if possible, or at the next apartment complex building over instead of your actual address. Those addresses are not kept, but a driver can have a good memory and a piece of paper. As far as inappropriate conversations go, Uber has a very good training video about that very topic that every driver must watch. Asking the rider questions about their residence and where they are going, etc. Also, a rider can set up their profile to record audio during their ride automatically. So if you ever feel like a driver has gone over the line with their prying questions, you can send the audio to the Uber security team to review, and they will take the appropriate actions. That would have been especially good to have if a driver says he's writing a book about killing Uber riders. Yes, which we talked about on the previous episode.
That's an interesting feature that I think a lot of the listeners would like to know about.
They are the only people who will hear the audio recordings. You cannot even hear or keep the recording. And then we have just a brief note here on a community project. Ask your audience to go out and take a variety of pictures of the prices of gas, produce, eggs, ice cream, cereal, and other packaged products may be tricky because the company will more than likely adjust the weight of the product instead of increasing the price. gather a community price map of the cost of goods now and compare them to the prices in January 2026 and 2027. That's just an idea from in this email.
Yeah, that's something I've been talking about on YouTube a lot.
Trucker Brad, who sometimes makes gas money driving for Uber.
Yeah, Trucker Brad.
Yeah.
Love us some Trucker Brad.
We do. So those are very good tips for Uber, especially picking up at a different location, further away from your address, or maybe just like your neighbor's house so that, you know, your neighbor is put into danger and not you. I'm totally kidding. And especially the recording piece of it too, though. Yeah. I'm going to tell every person I come into contact with, every woman that I meet in the future.
We got to figure out how to do it.
Hey, do you know about this recording feature on the Uber app?
Yeah, yeah.
Because I talk to so many women in particular who have these horrible experiences and would like to increase their safety. So that's a great feature.
Who doesn't like to increase their safety?
Yes. So thank you very much for that, Trucker Brad, and great community project idea. I think, like you said, Jesse, you've been talking about doing that just for yourself.
Yeah,
like,
just remember, take pictures, take screenshots to remember, because, you know, in a couple of years, I don't know how long it's going to take for the deleterious effects of Donald Trump's policies to kick in, but it's certainly prices aren't going to be going down with his tariff threats and everything else.
All right. So we are also doing the Patreon end of year gift. We're going to give you one more week to ensure that your addresses are up to date.
Please check your address. Even if you think it's right, just go in and check.
Yeah. So
I don't know why I sounded irritated when I said it. But.
Because we're going to mail you a Patreon end of year gift to your mailing address. So ensure that your mailing address is updated. I am going to print the mailing labels on Wednesday, January 15th. So that is the deadline to ensure that your address is correct, because I'm going to print the mailing labels and then we are going to sit down and begin stuffing hundreds of envelopes to hopefully reach you in the mail. So thank you very much. And on that note, we'd like to thank our new Patreon supporters. So we would like to thank Chloe. Susan L. ML.
ML.
Mark M. Elsbeth R.
William W.
Zule F.
Jen L.
Ms. Vanessa. William M.W.
Bob E.
Okay. I wonder if this person
It's a long username. I'm not going to be able to do that.
Now, I'm wondering if this person is trying to promote their business or what this deal is here. Let me just try to think about this for a second. Does it matter?
No, it doesn't matter.
Okay. Limited Appeal Home Theater. Congratulations on your free promotion, if that's what you're trying to do. I don't know. Old S. Maybe we should look into it before reading. No, I'm not going to look into it.
Who cares?
Linda H.
Eve P.
Ramy H.
Maybe Remy H.
That's correct. We had a friend who pronounces their name Ramy. So,
yeah.
Sandy M.N.
Linda P.
George R. I'm just going to read this whole one because this is a nice one. Nadius Maximus.
Linda S.
Doreen B. Paigey? I think it's probably Paigey. Patricia W.
Bruce W.M.
W.M. Adela.
John T.
Spock Scout.
Nicola.
Carol P.
Damien S.
Brenda T. Vittorio S. And we would like to give a very special shout out to a Patreon supporter who increased their pledge, and that would be Mark N. Very good friend of the show, very longtime supporter of the show. Thank you very much. Who also wanted to make sure that they did not miss the deadline for the mailing of the Patreon end of your gift. So make sure you've updated your address. Again, remember when I'm printing the mailing labels?
January 15th.
All right, don't wait. Don't procrastinate.
Be there or be fucking square.
All right, and if your envelope gets returned, I swear to God, I'm kidding. I'll send you a message, ask you for your actual address, and send it again.
There's still time to become a Patreon supporter in advance of this. Go to patreon.com/IDoubtItPodcast.
It's a new year, 2025, and you're probably thinking, how am I going to make this year different? How can I make this the best year ever? How am I going to build something for myself? I'm dying to be my own boss or see if I can turn this business idea I've been kicking around into a reality. But I don't know how to make that happen. Shopify is the key, and let me tell you how. The best time to start your new business is right now. Shopify makes it simple to create your brand, open for business, and get your first sale. Get your store up and running easily with thousands of customizable templates. No coding or design skills required. All you need to do is drag and drop. Their powerful social media tools let you connect all your channels and create shoppable posts and help you sell everywhere people scroll. Shopify makes it easy to manage your growing business. They help with details like shipping, taxes, and payments from one single dashboard, allowing you to focus on the important stuff, like growing your business. What happens if you don't act now? Will you regret it? What if someone beats you to the idea? Don't kick yourself when you hear this again in a year because you didn't do anything now. With Shopify, your first sale is closer than you think. Established in 2025. Has a nice ring to it, doesn't it? Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle to start selling with Shopify today. shopify.com/redcircle.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Stalemocracy. Facing down pessimistic politics with realistic optimism.
So something that I find really fascinating is how in the span of 4 years, you know, January 6th, we just had the 4-year anniversary of the insurrection. In 4 years, the Republican Party has somehow completely shifted the narrative of what took place that day.
Yeah.
Even though we all stood in front of our TVs at a loss for words with what we were witnessing.
Even though elected Republicans were beside themselves with what took place.
Absolutely. In fact, I'm going to read some quotes from Republicans, some notable Republicans that are now allies of Donald Trump. And you can compare some of these words to now. And then we're going to hear from, I think he's dead now, Pat Robertson. Is he dead now?
He is dead.
Okay.
Dead. I'm just going to let it play out. That's the Pat Robertson theme that's still on the board.
Yes.
The name of it is Evil Pat Robertson.
The official name of that song, yes. So this is a quote from Lindsey Graham on January 7th, 2021. Quote, when it comes to accountability, the president needs to understand that his actions were the problem, not the solution. That the rally yesterday was unseemly. It got out of hand. I said on the floor of the Senate, I cast my vote accordingly, that Joe Biden is the legitimate president-elect of the United States.
Yeah. Lindsey Graham, just fucking spineless.
Absolutely. And then we have Marco Rubio.
Mm.
Marco Rubio saying, this is on January 6th at 3:01 p.m. There is nothing patriotic about what is occurring on Capitol Hill. This is third world style anti-American anarchy.
Now accepting a position to be Secretary of State of these United States under Donald Trump.
In the Trump administration, which is promising to do what for the January 6th? Defendants.
Pardon.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Oh,
they call them the hostages.
Oh.
Not the convicts.
Oh, well, that's interesting.
The January 6th hostages.
This is Chip Roy, Republican Chip Roy from Texas.
Former Ted Cruz chief of staff, now chaos agent.
This is on January 6th, 2021. Today, the People's House was attacked, which is an attack on the Republic itself. There is no excuse for it. A woman died, and people need to go to jail. And the president should never have spun up certain Americans to believe something that simply cannot be.
I really need to get like a background, faint background patriotic music to roll while we do these things. Because me doing it myself is no good.
How?
Chip Roy's a fucking hypocrite.
How remarkable is this?
Yeah, crazy.
I mean, it's just remarkable. And so the reason that I'm wanting to play this Pat Robertson clip is because we all know Pat Robertson. And he, well, I guess maybe we don't, because I didn't even know he was dead. Well, I forgot he was dead. I just thought he was dead for so long that, you know.
Well, I think it's one of those deals where when you see him, like in later in life, like in the last months, he looks like he was literally melting away.
Yeah, yeah. But he's, you know, a prominent supporter of the Republican Party.
And Donald Trump.
Yeah, he's a prominent supporter of Donald Trump. And so this was Pat Robertson's reaction after January 6th.
There was a madness yesterday, and it came on
I know I'm going to be this guy when I'm old, too. But it's just, like, just not enough energy to even get the words out. That's
kind of like Tom Homan is now. He's already there.
I don't know if that's the case with Tom Homan. I think Tom Homan is just, like, a real fan of oatmeal. And he's constantly got, like, remnants of his oatmeal dinner in his mouth. We're going to do the mass deportation.
I don't remember why this is in my head, but it's like he's got marbles in his mouth. What's that from?
That was Donald Trump's criticism of Seth Meyers doing the White House Correspondents' Dinner. Yeah, he's got marbles in his mouth. Anyway, here's a melting candle, Pat Robertson.
There was a madness yesterday, and it came on Donald Trump. And people had been hoping and hoping he had his own people in the Senate all ready to fight for him. Congress was ready. Ted Cruz was ready. And so what does Trump do? He goes crazy. And he urges his huge crowd that came to Washington to support him to take a march on the Capitol. And suddenly, there may have been some ringers that went into that group as well. We don't know if there were some people as well, but they took over the Capitol. They invaded the offices and just did horrible thing. And instead of supporting him, now the people who were all lined up to have a hearing on every one of those voter fraud claims was no longer able to do anything. They couldn't wait to vote against him. And you think also he went down into Georgia in that close election and told people the Republican governor was crooked, was fraudulent. The Secretary of State was fraudulent, who's a Republican, was fraudulent. And he said, your votes won't count. And so he suppressed the vote in Georgia in those Republican areas that was so important. And so the two senators went down in defeat in Georgia. Madness.
He really
kind of petered out there.
Yeah, I think he got a little tired. But again,
also not even enough energy to clear out his juice mouth. He,
as you can tell, was also directly blaming Donald Trump for the insurrection.
He even blamed him for the election loss in Georgia.
Right. So, again, I mean, I could keep reading quotes from so many Republicans who directly blamed Donald Trump, who said people needed to be in jail, who said that Donald Trump needed to be held responsible for what he did that day.
I mean, chief among them, Kevin McCarthy and Senate Majority Leader at the time, Mitch McConnell, both did.
Absolutely. Yeah. So let's... I honestly don't know what this next clip is because I didn't title it well enough. I think it's from CNN, and it's about basically how this, how this happened over time, how over the past 4 years, this rewriting of what took place during the insurrection, rewriting of history, right, how that took place.
Well, if you keep in mind, in the moment, everyone was united in the, at the time, united around the fact that January 6th was what it was, which, yes, was an insurrection, which was a vicious, violent attack on the Capitol and our democracy. And now there's division over whether that is the case.
Yeah, and so before we get to the clip, actually, I remembered what it is because I wrote it in a different place then. So this is from PBS NewsHour. This is from PBS NewsHour. And you're going to be hearing from the host of PBS NewsHour on this day, William Brangham. But the first voice that you're going to hear is NPR's Tom Bowman. And then you're also going to hear from Lauren Hodges. They're two journalists. They were both at the Capitol on January 6th. They were there witnessing what happened. And this is them talking about that day, but also how we got here 4 years later with a rewriting of history.
Well, I remember covering Trump's speech. I was there above the Washington Monument, that area, in the sea of people. And then I walked down and started interviewing people, and everyone was respectful. And then I started walking down Pennsylvania Ave, and I tell people it was a festive atmosphere, which sounds strange. You know, people were laughing, joking, waving to each other. And then as I got closer to the Capitol, it was like a storm was coming in. There was this sense of anger and bad energy. And at that moment, Lauren called me. She was up in the Capitol in the middle of a mob.
I was there with our then extremism correspondent, Hannah Lamb, and pretty much as soon as we got to the Capitol grounds, there was kind of this hunger for violence. People were really ready to start something.
You could sense that.
Oh, they were speaking about it. They had an eagerness to see some violence or participate in it.
In the last 4 years, we have been going through this process of trying to define and redefine what that day was all about. And there's been an enormous amount of revisionist history going on about that. What is your sense of what is driving that?
Initially, everyone agreed, Democrats, Republicans, everyone, this was a bad thing. This was an insurrection. And some Republican leaders put the blame on Donald Trump, said, you instigated this. You started this insurrection. And almost immediately, the revision started. Well, they weren't Trump supporters.
It was Antifa.
It was Antifa, Black Lives Matter. Mm-hmm. You know, FBI agents were up there instigating the crowd. That was when the narrative started to change. And it really started with Fox News.
Well, and then the FBI element, once the FBI actually started making arrests, that was when it became unavoidable who was there. It was Trump supporters. So then a new narrative shift started where it was, well, these were Trump supporters, but they were patriots and they didn't do anything wrong. They were just caught up in a crowd. It was a bunch of good people having a bad day.
And again, Donald Trump still calls them patriots. And it looks like he's going to pardon quite a few of them, those who didn't get involved in violence. They're going to get pardoned.
Yeah.
This few bad apples idea percolates a lot in the podcast that you guys did called a Good Guy. Can you tell us about the man at the center of that?
Well, his name is Josh Abate. He was a Marine and still is a Marine. He was a sergeant in the Marine Corps, third generation Marine. And he grew up about an hour west of Washington.
And he believed that the election had been stolen. He was, yes, like many of those.
Correct.
There.
He didn't. Yeah. He always watched Fox News and far-right websites. So that's where he got his information from.
And he was among those that entered the Capitol that, mm-hmm, day. I guess it's not really clear if he engaged in violence or not. He says he did not. How does the Marine Corps reckon with not just Abate, but several other Marines who showed up that day?
1,500 people were arrested in connection with the insurrection or riot, whatever you want to call it. About 200 military members, mostly veterans, were there. And a large number of them were Marines, right?
So disproportionate number.
Because they are the smallest of the fighting forces.
So they go on to talk about how the military doesn't actually know how widespread the problem of extremism is because they haven't been collecting data on it. They go on to talk about how the Marines, they condemned the Marine, but they didn't have consequences, basically. Like, they got misdemeanors and they had to do community service, but all three of the Marines that they're talking about in this segment, after conviction, they, through a Marine Corps panel, they were kept in the Marines.
Yeah.
After going to the insurrection.
At least one of them faced military judicial punishment. And not only were they retained, they weren't convicted. Not only were they not convicted, they were retained, but also the one that they mentioned worked within the national intelligence apparatus, like has a very important adjacent job directly to national security.
Right.
Not, I don't mean like, obviously they're Marines, national security, but I mean like intelligence gathering and has access to highly sensitive information and participated in the insurrection. And not only that, I know about this case. This is not from the clip. They lied. They did an interview. It was probably Hannah Alam is her name. It's not Hannah Lam. It's Hannah Alam, A-L-L-A-M. And they interviewed this guy, and he lied through his fucking teeth about his participation. Oh, we just got caught up. All of a sudden, we were in the building. We didn't know. I had no idea. And then they went through and looked at all the footage, and he was an active participant in the chanting and the rioting and the violence, and he's an active duty Marine. Still is.
Yeah, and we're seeing the problem of extremism in the military in things like the Las Vegas Tesla bombing. Yeah.
In fact, one of the colonels involved in the decision to not punish this guy, this kid, this Marine, said, I'm just sick of hearing about it. Mm-hmm. You're sick of hearing about an armed insurrection against the country in an attempt to overturn a free and fair, democratically processed American election. That guy is just as much of an extremist as these fucking pukes.
Yeah, so it's something that the military should definitely be taking more seriously.
Yes.
Especially, like I said, I don't know if you processed it, because I know you were thinking of your thing, but the Las Vegas guy who was a Green Beret, right?
Yeah.
And
currently active, now he's dead, but current active duty.
Yeah, so this is something that the military should be more worried about, is extremism in military members. But if you want to know more about this, that was NPR's Tom Bowman and Lauren Hodges, and they have a podcast about these Marines and this case, and it's called A Good Guy. So yeah, if you want to go and listen to like in-depth reporting on that. Jesse, I do want to ask you about this line that they keep using: those that weren't involved in violence on January 6th that are going to be prioritized as far as pardons go. And I know Nancy Pelosi was recently asked about this too, I believe on Face the Nation with Margaret Brennan. What is your view of that? Those who weren't involved in violence.
If you entered the building, you participated in an insurrection. Whether there's literal, definitional, denotative violence, an insurrection is a violent endeavor.
Mm-hmm.
You want to end democracy. No.
Right.
No.
Right.
Maybe offer them clemency, I guess, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do the thing that Democrats are now doing, which is, we got to try to find common ground. They are not worthy of a pardon. They are not worthy of a sentence commutation.
Yeah, also because you knew what the vibe was, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you heard Lauren Hodges at the top of that clip talking about it. They were openly discussing the violent intent.
Yeah.
And so if you were there, you heard that, and then once everyone starts smashing in the windows and attacking the police, like,
well,
you start to see that all happen, and you can make a choice, right? You can make a choice to say, whoa, this is not what I intended,
right?
This is not what I wanted to get out of this deal.
That's also buying into the narrative of Republicans, though, of it's just a protest that got out of hand, when this was premeditated.
Yeah, but I'm saying that they, on the ground, right, let's give them the benefit of the doubt, whatever. Reporters are saying, on the ground, if you were there, you heard these chants of violence. You heard it. You knew. That was the intent.
Yeah.
So
on your way, if you were not a willing, like, oh, this is going to be an insurrection.
Right.
I don't believe that's the case. I believe everyone went to the Capitol with one intent in mind. But even if we are to suspend reality and say, when you're walking in groups up to the Capitol, you're going to hear people say, we're going to fuck this shit up.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
So like you said, did you say this? I don't know. The certifying of the 2024 election results happened without any disruption.
Yeah, none.
And afterward, Vice President Kamala Harris gave a statement on certifying the 2024 election results.
Today, I did what I have done my entire career, which is take seriously the oath that I have taken many times to support and defend the Constitution of the United States, which included today performing my constitutional duties to ensure that the people of America, the voters of America, will have their votes counted, that those votes matter, and that they will determine then the outcome of an election. I do believe very strongly that America's democracy is only as strong as our willingness to fight for it. Every single person, their willingness to fight for and respect the importance of our democracy. Otherwise, it is very fragile, and it will not be able to withstand moments of crisis. And today, America's democracy stood.
So, again, a week for me doesn't really hit at the heart of the problem at all. The people that she's hoping to reach in that statement aren't listening, don't care.
Yeah.
And so it's a bummer. You know, it's a bummer that the Biden administration is not doing everything that they possibly can on the way out to communicate what a danger and what a threat Donald Trump is. I just saw a video of Biden being asked if Donald Trump is a threat to democracy. And he said in response that he believes actions that he has taken threaten democracy. Right.
It's just like fucking weak.
Just parsing it out. And yeah. It's very bothersome. And I feel like we are all being left to deal with the coming wreckage that is in store without any kind of assistance from the people that have the power.
There's such an adherence to tradition with Joe Biden and these septuagenarian and octogenarian representatives in our government that even Joe Biden, when he appointed Merrick Garland, he was still saying Mitch McConnell was an honorable man and Kevin McCarthy was an honest man.
Mm-hmm.
And then appointed Merrick Garland, who sat on his motherfucking hands for over a year, not appointing a special counsel, not pursuing prosecution of these criminal traitors to our country. And we could have been a lot farther along. The investigations and the cases and the grand juries and the trials could have been completed of Donald Trump and his cohort far sooner, where we could have avoided Donald Trump being president again. It's because of Joe Biden's adherence to this nonsense, my good friend across the aisle bullshit, that we are where we are.
Yeah, and that we're still seeing Democrats try to do this. I mean, yeah. With the op-ed that was written in the New York Times and with people saying that RFK Jr. is right about some things. And
Jared Moskowitz saying that Matt Gaetz was going to be the most powerful attorney general in the history of the country.
Yeah, so I don't know what's going to cause them to meet the moment, but we will see, and we would love to know what you think about this. 657-464-7609 or send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. You know, one thing we didn't talk about is Luigi Mangione and the killing of UnitedHealthcare CEO Brian Thompson.
Yeah.
And Luigi is the accused, allegedly, for killing Brian Thompson. And in response to that killing, there was this very widespread conversation about healthcare in this country.
Well, let's not sugarcoat what took place. There was widespread, not conversation, but a celebration over it.
Yes, but
I did not take part in that.
Some people were celebrating and some people were like, whoa, stop celebrating.
Yeah.
And let's talk about the healthcare problems.
I think I was on that side. Like, let's not celebrate this, but if we can squeeze out some kind of a silver lining from this dark cloud of the death of a dude and his kids now being fatherless, is maybe we can make this a catalyst to change in our horrifically immoral healthcare system.
And I will say this. It was an interesting response, the celebration, because I think that it speaks to some sort of level of awareness within the American public of something that I really try to get at with a lot of the videos that I do on YouTube, which is trying to educate people and convince them of their own financial precarity without going so far as to create vulnerability that causes them to tune out or give in to some of the Republican Party's tricks that they like to play on poor and working class people to get them to support them. because I think the answer here, like I always think, is class solidarity. And I think people are affected by the healthcare issue significantly in this country because we do not take care of our people. And people can acknowledge that healthcare is the one area where you really, you can't chalk it up to choices that someone made, right? I think with homelessness, a lot of people can say, oh, you made these choices, even though they're wrong, right? Even though they're wrong. Healthcare is the one area where people can acknowledge, oh shit, it can strike you at any time. And you really do have no control over it. And anyone can get cancer and then have their lives ruined and they can, you know, go bankrupt because we don't take care of people in this country. And so we had kind of this awakening where a lot of people started having these conversations that this is wrong, that health insurance companies should not be able to deny you care. And I came across this news package from NBC News that really illustrates how bad things are with health insurance companies in this country.
Kay Sue has been battling cancer for nearly a decade. One of the hardest moments was in 2018. The cancer returned, stage 4, metastatic.
Did it feel like a death sentence in that moment?
Absolutely. And it still does. It's just, it's almost like being on death row and just waiting. All of my off-label drugs.
Remarkably, she was able to battle the cancer back, but her oncologist said it could return again, and PET scans were key to detecting it.
How often do you have to get the PET scans?
Should be 4 to 5 months.
A schedule she followed until her private health insurance changed to Cigna, and she says the company wouldn't pay for the screening.
They thought it was not medically necessary.
Does your oncologist think it's medically necessary?
Yes.
So does Dr. Ashley Sumrall from the American Society of Clinical Oncology.
PET scans are all part of accepted guidelines. That means that multiple experts agree that a PET scan is appropriate.
But Cigna refused to pay for the scans, which can cost $10,000 to $15,000 each. Sue's doctor appealed and was denied. With the delay in her screening, Sue worried the cancer would return. Angela Pike understands that struggle well. Her husband, Tracy, was diagnosed with stage 4 stomach cancer in 2023.
He was so sick, he went from a 250-pound man to about 130 pounds.
Tracy's doctors in Louisville ran out of strategies to help him. They said he needed HIPEC surgery, a kind of chemotherapy that a cancer center in Houston agreed to perform.
It was about 10 or 11 o'clock at night, the night before the surgery, where we got a phone call that from the surgeon himself, that the insurance had actually denied the surgery.
In the denial letter, Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois said HIPEC was experimental. But here's what the American Society of Clinical Oncology says.
HIPEC is no longer considered experimental. It has crossed the threshold into widely available treatments.
But not for the Pike family, whose surgeon appealed, only to be denied. At one point, the mother of three took to TikTok with her guitar, hoping someone might be able to help them.
Surgery was only $42,000. They put a price tag on my husband's life and they decided he wasn't worth 42 grand.
How desperate did you feel in those moments?
It doesn't get more desperate than opening up your guitar case and standing in front of a hospital in 100 degree weather in Houston.
He never got the treatment. Instead, his cancer spread. And roughly a year after his diagnosis, Tracy Pike died at the age of 46.
Are you left wondering what would have happened if he had gotten that procedure?
There are definitely a lot of days where I've thought about that.
In a 2022 survey, clinical oncology professionals were asked about the effect health insurance authorization had on patient care.
I'm going to pause for a second. And I don't want to break into like a Chris Rock bit here. But I think it's wrong. The assassination of Brian Thompson. But I understand why someone would be driven to make a choice like that. It's like an extreme civil disobedience. Like the most extreme form of civil disobedience that our country co-signs the immorality, the murder, if you will, of this 46-year-old husband, this man who could have been treated for a minuscule sum for a multi-billion dollar corporation. It's a fucking nothing amount. So I think it's wrong that Brian Thompson was murdered by whomever did it. But I understand the fury and the rage and the motivation behind it.
Well, another thing that I think that this has created is a conversation surrounding who gets to adopt the term violence, right? So, yeah. Like, everyone could agree that violence was committed against Brian Thompson. But is that violence? What you just heard, when you heard that the health insurance was not going to help and it was denying claims, and then someone died.
Yeah, because it's not.
Is that violence? Do we code that as violence?
Yes,
and
for sure.
We should be coding that in our brains as violence. That is a violent act.
Because it's not a charitable contribution. This family paid their premiums, paid for the service, paid. And then when it came time for the company to do what it was paid to do, they said, no, we're not gonna do that. Your husband's gonna die because we're not gonna follow through on our... It's absolutely fucking violence.
Yeah, and in our society, the people who are in the power structure are entitled to violent acts against them being coded as violence, but it's poor and working class people who don't get that same treatment. And our next story is gonna be an illustration of that. I did a story about a woman who is in labor getting a ticket because homelessness has been criminalized by the Supreme Court. So different cities are passing anti-camping laws to cite homeless people for sleeping outside.
Not just a pregnant homeless woman. She was in fucking labor.
Right.
Went to the hospital, had a kid.
Right. Her attorney called it violence. I talked about that in my video. Many people saying in the comments, it's not violent. No, it's violence.
Yeah.
And we don't code it because that's a poor person.
Yeah.
And people don't care as much.
Yeah.
It's disgusting.
Let's let this clip play out.
87% said they resulted in denials of therapy. 80% said they resulted in disease progression. 36% said they resulted in patient death. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois, Pike's insurance company, declined to comment on her husband's case, adding, "We are committed to increasing access to safe, appropriate, and effective health care based on the best available information and research."
Liars.
Sue's insurer, Cigna, tells NBC News, "We strive to do our best to ensure that each person gets the appropriate care as quickly and easily as possible. We fell short for Miss Sue." Cigna contacted Sue after NBC News reached out to the company for comment on our story. Sue did ultimately get that PET scan this fall, she says, but only after her employer paid for it out of pocket.
Your health is in the hands of an insurance company. Do you feel like they care about your well-being?
No, I don't think so. As a result of me fighting for that PET scan, I found out that I have metastasis to my liver.
The screening that had been delayed confirmed her worst fears. Her cancer has returned. Stephanie Gosk, NBC News, New York.
The scan that had been delayed revealed metastasis. Violence.
Yeah, so when I listened to that news pack, I know it's a little bit longer than the ones that we like to play, but I just thought it was very well done in terms of the structure of how they told the story and really highlighting that health professionals say that insurance denials lead to disease progression and death in their patients.
So listen, if I have a finite reservoir of compassion and concern, I can tell you where I'm not going to waste it. I will have compassion for the children of Brian Thompson, for his wife who didn't have anything to do with his job. But I don't really have a lot of compassion for a guy who led an organization that is one of the worst offenders in this particular arena. I'm gonna reserve my compassion for these patients that we're learning about. The man who died because his treatment was denied. The woman whose cancer is far worse now because it was delayed. That's where my compassion, the resources are going to be reserved for.
So We would love to know what you think about this. 657-464-7609, or you can send an email to idoubtit@dollamore.com. So we talked about that exit survey at the top of the show about police, and this is going to be a segment about police, because we learned last month that there were 13 corrections officers and a nurse implicated in an attack on an incarcerated man named Robert Brooks. And this was at the Marcy Correctional Facility in Central New York. And I unfortunately saw clips of the video. I wasn't going to watch the video, because when you read the news as much as we do, I will just speak for myself. I need to limit the amount of time that I see things like that. And unfortunately, I watched another creator's video about it, and they flashed in the video. And so I saw clips of it, and it's absolutely horrific. And so if you are someone, I guess, who is like listening to this story and looking for ways to give these corrections officers some sort of space to say that what they did is correct, I would recommend that you go and watch the video actually for yourself, so that you can see what evil genuinely is. And these are dangerous people.
It's okay? A man who was bound.
He was handcuffed.
Yeah.
And they beat him for 20 minutes. They took turns. And at least three of these prison guards have been implicated in previous beatings. They were investigated in previous beatings. So this is a PBS report from Laura Barone Lopez talking about this case and how there are still no charges that have been filed.
Body cam footage shows Robert Brooks repeatedly kicked, punched, and choked after arriving at the Marcy Correctional Facility on December 9th. Brooks had been serving a 12-year sentence for an assault in 2017. It is unclear why he was transferred to the Central New York prison. At one point, one officer yanks him by the neck and drops his semi-conscious body on an examination table. The beating lasted roughly 20 minutes. Brooks died the following morning. In a statement, an attorney for the Brooks family said, "Mr. Brooks was fatally, violently beaten by a group of officers whose job was to keep him safe. He deserved to live." New York Governor Kathy Hochul has requested the termination of 13 guards and one nurse implicated in the assault. After visiting the facility where Brooks was beaten, Governor Hochul released a statement yesterday, saying in part, "The system failed Mr. Brooks, and I will not be satisfied until there has been significant culture change." In the aftermath of Brooks's death, community leaders and activists are calling for justice and reform.
Just because individuals are incarcerated doesn't mean that they give up their rights to be human beings.
A 2023 investigation by the Marshall Project in the New York Times found that from 2010 to 2022, New York's Department of Corrections filed 5,642 disciplinary cases against prison staff, but only succeeded in firing 28 officers. Three of the guards involved in the assault against Brooks were previously accused of beating inmates in a similar manner. As of today, none of the 14 employees implicated have been charged with wrongdoing. But New York State Attorney General Letitia James promised a full investigation.
"Because I have a responsibility and duty to provide the Brooks family, their loved ones, and all New Yorkers with transparency and accountability."
Authorities have not released an official cause of death for Brooks, but according to court documents, the medical examiner's preliminary findings show, quote, "concern for asphyxia due to compression of the neck." Robert Brooks was 43 years old. For the PBS NewsHour, I'm Laura Barone Lopez.
And like I said, according to reporting from the New York Times, two of the corrections officers and a sergeant accused in the death of Robert Brooks were previously named in federal lawsuits filed by prisoners accusing them of brutal attacks that left one man disfigured and another in a wheelchair. A lawyer for one of the injured men drew a line from the earlier accusations of violence to the attack this month, quote, "The fact that they failed to rein in these officers that they knew had beaten someone else is a direct contributor to Mr. Brooks's death," said Katie Rosenfeld, the lawyer. She criticized the New York State Department of Corrections and Community Supervision for fighting her client's lawsuit for 4 years. These are known threats
yeah.
to public safety.
They are criminals.
These are dangerous people.
Yeah.
And here's what happens every time, right? I post about this online and people say, well, he was serving a 12-year sentence for assault. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he was serving a 12-year prison sentence for assault.
Yeah, the sentence is the punishment. They are not there to mete out punishment. They're there to manage the living situation of people who are incarcerated as a punishment for their crime.
And also, what do all of these people think happens to someone who is beaten and tortured by people that have power over them in prison for 12 years, and then when they come out and they return to society?
Right.
What do you think is going to happen with someone who has been treated like that in that setting? Do you think they're going to come out better? Or do you think they're going to come out probably with significant problems?
More broken than when they entered.
Okay, we should be concerned, all of us, just about human rights, period. But if you are one of these people who's looking for a reason, like the just world hypothesis, you need to make it make sense, you need to figure out why he deserved this. He didn't deserve it.
Yeah, and also, and I think the audience understands, we're not making a case that this guy, this victim of this murder, that's what it was, is like some saint or some hero. Not at all. He's probably a fucking bad guy. But he was convicted of his crime, and the sentence was the jail sentence. That was the punishment. Not the regular beatings that led to his murder, to his death.
Yeah, but also people should be concerned about the kinds of people who are so disturbed that they can beat someone who can't fight back for 20 minutes, can torture someone. That's that is a dangerous person. And maybe people haven't been around people like that, okay? But I have, and they are dangerous people to have walking around in society. And those people have guns, and they have badges.
I would hope that you're not as naive to think, well, this is an isolated incident that only happened one time. How many beatings have they administered that did not end up in death, but maybe the maiming, the serious injury?
Yeah, especially when you watch the video, it's routine. It's another day at work. They're not in a hurry. They're taking their time.
Not
they're
worried about being caught.
They're taking turns. It's another day in the office. And that's scary, too. So I'm going to link in the show notes to reporting from the city, and the title of it is Former Prisoners Say Deadly Robert Brooks Beating is Sadly Routine, and they interview people who were incarcerated in the prison system there, who have personal experience with this, and it's very disturbing, and it's important for us to read that. So
we'd love to know what you think as we end the show on that particular unsavory note. 657-464-7609. Of course, you can email a voice memo from your smartphone to idoubtit@dollamore.com. Please consider supporting this work. We feel it is important, and we hope you do too. You can go to patreon.com/idoubtitpodcast and become a patron. $2 a month is where it starts, and we would love to have you in the Patreon family. We will see you next time. Until then, Brittany Page, I'm Jesse Dollamore, and this has been I Doubt It.
Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.